You're listening to a 3CR podcast recorded in the 3CR Community Radio Studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you like what you hear, please consider donating or subscribing so we can keep bringing you more independent community content. For more information, go to 3cr.org.au.
3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast. Oh yeah. Alternative news, analysis and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m. Only double. Clap your hands.
Good morning, listeners. You're tuning in to 3CR on 855 a.m. This morning it is 7 a.m. on Monday, the 1st of September 2025, which means that today is the first day of spring. If you're tuning in, it's just me this morning. My name's Edmi, I'll be your host, and Rob and Hannah are off this morning. It's been a big weekend. There were some big protests in the city yesterday, I'm sure most of the listeners are aware. There were anti-fascist rallies, anti-immigration rallies and clashes. I think at the moment, the most important thing is community care, coming together for each other and holding each other and mutual aid and showing up where possible. With that, might jump straight into it. We've got quite a busy show. So first up on the show, I'll be playing a pre-recorded interview that I did over the phone on Saturday evening. I spoke with a woman named Rana Hamid, who is part of the Global Samud Flotilla. And yesterday, our time, they would have left and embarked on their journey to open a humanitarian corridor and get aid and medical and food supplies into Gaza. So there's a number of boats in this flotilla, and there's two parts to the interview. After that, I'll be playing a song from the movie Crown and Country, which was screened at Capitol Cinema Friday evening, and it's quite a beautiful turnout. Lots of people in the crowd and some very strong fire there. There was four generations of men from the family of Jumba Jimba, Wanda Jumba Jimba, and it was very powerful being in one room with four generations of men from the same family. They come from Central Australia. After that, joined live in the studio by Lucy. Lucy is discussing a research opportunity for transgender and gender diverse adults in Australia, and the research project will be conducted by La Trobe University, focusing on the health and well-being of trans and gender-diverse adults in Australia, with the aim of better understanding their experiences of stress, social connectedness and support, and how these experiences impact health and well-being over time. Following that, at 8 a.m., I'll be joined live over the phone by Natalie Farrer to discuss yesterday's anti-immigration protests and I suppose the clashes that ensued, and topics around Camp Sovereignty and what happened, what occurred yesterday. And finally, we'll be playing a segment, as we do each month, from Tiny Sparks and Turning Points, which is a bulletin from our good friends at the Commons Social Change Library. And today they'll bring us some radical events from over the years that have changed this country. And with that, let's get into it.
Folks know about it, some don't. Some will learn to shout it, some won't. But sooner or later, baby, here's a ditty. Say you're gonna have to get right down to the real nitty-gritty. Let's get right down to the real nitty-gritty now. One, two, nitty-gritty now, yeah, boom. Nitty-gritty, who? Ooh. keep repeating right down to the nitty gritty. Hey. Ooh, ooh, double beating, right down to the nitty gritty. Yeah, double beating, keep repeating.
You're listening to 3CR on 855 AM. These are the news headlines for Monday, the 1st of September, 2025. A survey with 500 disability workers has flagged a crisis with concerns about burnout, underpay, understaffing, and the quality of support and care suffering. The Health Services Union has sounded the alarm after the survey outlines statistics determining that, quote, 55% of disability workers have considered leaving in the past year. 91% have at least thought about it occasionally. 49% report that they often or always lack enough staff for safe quality care, and 86% say it happens at least sometimes. 71% say that shortages have already impacted their ability to provide care they'd want for a loved one, and 74% say that their pay doesn't reflect their skill, responsibility, and emotional labor. 62% report frequent or constant burnout. 72% say the workforce is not large enough or stable enough for current and future needs. And 86% fear wages could be cut without government action, end quote. An NDIS workforce crisis panel was held at Parliament House in Canberra last Tuesday, August the 26th, where frontline workers and employees spoke to MPs and senators about the need for urgent federal intervention. Disability workforce representatives and several major disability employers signed a pledge to, quote, work together in co-design with people living with a disability to lift the quality of services and supports, end quote. The pledge called for a, quote, workforce compact, a targeted funding pool of $5 per hour per worker for workers employed by registered providers of core supports to enable employers to negotiate with workers for better pay and conditions that stabilize the workforce and improve participant outcomes, end quote. Also in news this week, a coalition of over 20 organisations have signed an open letter to the Northern Territory government following its announcement of a 12-month trial allowing civilians to purchase and carry pepper spray from today. The letter, titled Civil Society Open Letter to the Finock Yardo Government, says the territory's government approach on crime is, quote, negatively impacting mainly Indigenous families and communities. We're not doing enough to address the root causes of harm, end quote. Among the signatories of the letter are advocacy groups such as the Aboriginal Medical Services Alliance NT, Victims of Crime NT, the Justice Reform Initiative NT, and Justice Not Jails. The letter adds that, quote, ill-thought-out reactions can result in victims of crime not being protected at all. There is no evidence that spreading weapons through our community deters or reduces crime in the long term, end quote. Western Australia is the only other jurisdiction where it is legal for the public to carry pepper spray. However, it is sold at a lower strength compared to that of the spray used by police. In just 1 year, the Finock Yardo government also gave public service officers the ability to carry weapons, reinstated the use of spit hoods, lowered the age of criminal responsibility to 10, and expanded mandatory sentencing. As a result of this, the Northern Territory now has the second highest imprisonment rate in the world behind El Salvador. Also in news this week, the Kimberley region of WA is under threat from the oil and gas industry. Tens of thousands of fracking wells could be drilled across the Kimberley's large and mostly intact ecosystems if the current plans move ahead. Black Mountain Energy and Buru Energy are pushing to exploit an estimated 438 trillion cubic feet of gas beneath the onshore Canning Basin, an operation that would produce climate pollution more than double Australia's Paris Agreement limits for emissions. This expansion comes despite growing concerns from traditional owners and environmental experts. Rights and knowledge of Aboriginal communities who have cared for this land for tens of thousands of years are being sidelined in the rush for fossil fuel profits. The proposed Valhalla gas project alone could see over 2,000 frack wells and require massive volumes of water, chemicals, and industrial infrastructure, further degrading endangered ecosystems and threatening endangered fauna, and increasing the risk of pollution and radioactive waste. What's unfolding is not just an environmental issue, but a cultural, climate, and justice emergency. The WA government has limited the onshore gas export ban and left large areas of the Kimberley open to fracking, despite only limited oversight and serious safety issues already emerging from early drilling efforts. Local communities, traditional owners, and allies across Australia are calling for immediate action to stop fracking in the Kimberley before it's too late. These have been the news headlines for Monday, the 1st of September. You're listening to 3CR on 855 AM.
Hi, I'm Cam Smith from Yanar Pasaran.
I'm Andy Fleming.
Andy, quick question. The commercial media, that provides a voice to marginalised communities, doesn't it? And as governments around the world take a turn to the far right, it provides a critical anti-fascist analysis?
Cam, how many times do I have to tell you this? No, that's not the case.
Ah, that's not good. So who is doing all that?
Cam, community media, including 3CR, Melbourne's community radio.
And how can we support 3CR in doing that?
We can subscribe, Cam, at any time.
By visiting 3cr.org.au or calling the station on 9419 8377. Subscribe to 3CR.
And stay anti-fascist.
So to kick off today's show, I'll be playing part one of a two-part segment from a pre-recorded interview with Rana Hamid from the Global Summit Flotilla. Saturday evening, I spoke over the phone with Rana Hamida from the Global Summit Flotilla as they prepared to journey from Barcelona to carry medical aid, food, and humanitarian supplies across the Mediterranean Sea and into Gaza. The flotilla left Barcelona Sunday yesterday, and more boats are planning to leave from Tunis and Sicily on the 4th of September later this week. The Global Samud Flotilla are a coalition of everyday people, organisers, humanitarians, doctors, artists, clergy, lawyers and seafarers who believe in human dignity and the power of nonviolent action. In June, they launched a globally coordinated mobilisation by land, sea and air and are returning with a unified strategy. One goal and global coordination like never before. Their efforts build on decades of Palestinian resistance and international solidarity, and despite belonging to and holding different nations, faiths, and political beliefs, are united by one single truth: the siege and genocide must end. The Global Samud Flotilla are independent, international, and unaffiliated with any government or political party. Our allegiance is to justice, freedom, and the sanctity of human life. Hi Rana, how are you going?
Kia ora, very, very excited. We are about to set sail to an export for some fueling. So yes, I am overworked over the last week, but we are high morale, so it's pretty good.
So whereabouts are you currently?
We are currently in Barcelona.
Can you speak to us about where things are currently at in Gaza with Israel's deliberate starvation and ongoing military campaign or genocide?
It's absolutely heart-shattering. Like, every day it's escalating. Israel is acting with complete impunity with the Palestinian people in Gaza, and they are in such a big space of forced starvation and forced humiliation. People are being ethnically cleansed from their homes and threatened if they don't move to other places. I have friends over there, and they are experiencing such crazy time at the moment. They are so steadfast, they are so strong, and they are inspiring all of us to actually make a move. So at the moment, there is a basically clear declaration of forced famine and starvation in Palestine, in Gaza, by the UN. And we are basically in response to that. We are in response to a civil call, a call from the Palestinian people to be heard and it is about time right now to do that.
Yeah, the Global Samud Flotilla, I believe, is the largest coordinated civilian flotilla in history. And I believe the word Samud in Palestinian means resilience and encompasses resilience of spirit. But can you comment on what it's taken to coordinate and prepare the members of the global movement to Gaza for this push on getting medical aid and food supplies to the Palestinian people?
There is a lot of effort being put in here, and it's taking a lot of trust and conviction and devotion to our humanity, and also a clear and grounded listening to what the Palestinian people are calling for. Mm. Every day, it's long days of preparation, and this mission has been being prepared for since the global march to Gaza in Egypt that was blocked completely, and also the Madeleine from the Freedom Flotilla Coalition that was illegally intercepted in international water, and all of the humans, the activists that were on board carrying baby formulas and aid for the people in Gaza were kidnapped from the seas, from their ship, and their ship was stolen and then deported. And that was all an inspiration for all of us to continue escalating. So it has been taking really, really long hours of preparation and planning. There is big teams that are from over 44 countries from all over the world that are coming together with the same goal, which is one point of focus to the humanity that is calling from within Palestine, and the resilience of the Palestinian people in Gaza that is every day inspiring all of us to rise up and to do something and to embody our fullest ability and capacity to empower and also remember our power that we have to impact change right now. So a lot of work, and a lot of hours, a lot of preparation, a lot of trust in each other, a lot of, there is so many things that can prevent us every day from speaking up. The fear and the doubt, and do we know enough, and what about that, and now it's so clear that we know enough. So it is the trust that we do know enough, and what we're witnessing right now in Gaza, the forced starvation and the killing of the Palestinian people, is not okay. And we have to do something as a civil society. We have to do something as humans, one and simple. That's it.
Mm-hmm. What are the feelings right now amongst the crew members embarking on the journey? And can you paint a picture for our listeners about what the boat will be looking like and what the boat will be carrying?
Everyone has high morale and doing the best they can to fulfill the requirements for us to safely embark on this journey. And also in their ships, there has been, I'm walking out right now, I'm going to like look around and just describe to you. Everyone is just communicating. There is heaps of communication happening around. People asking, what do you need? Filling the boats with the supplies that we need to be safely on this journey for the next weeks. And there is a lot of planning of the aid that is going to be carried on board. So there is a sun that is shining, and it's not only shining from the sky, but it's shining from within each person that is standing over there with so much humanity of what is coming next, but at the same time with so much conviction and love and groundedness in why we're doing this. So the picture in front of me is very unifying. It's all the colors of the spectrum, and it's all grounded in love and connection and community and the remembrance of what are we here for and how we are here to stand next to each other and hold each other accountable and call upon each other to step up, right? Like, it's time to step up into what we are being called into. And that's, for me personally, that's like the evolution of the human race, right? And that's the evolution and the unfolding of the universe. If we want to continue unfolding into this beautiful life that we are in and that we are blessed to have, and that what every single one of us, including the Palestinian people, deserve and have the inherent right to have. So the picture in here is very inspiring. Everyone is just so inspiring and beautiful with all their different little aspects of their personality. And that is what is reminding us that with our differences comes our strength too. So we're leaning into each other's differences, and we are holding each other in our vulnerabilities and our doubts, and reminding each other of our power. So the picture here is very, very inspiring, and I really wish that this picture does get painted over and through, just like the Palestinian resilience and the Palestinian people have painted their resilience and their love and their love of life upon all of us here. They shine such bright light on all of us, and we are just inspired by that, and we will continue to walk alongside them as long as they are calling.
That's beautiful. I can feel your fire through the phone. It's inspiring me.
Thank you. Thanks. It's just so, so important to remember. And I do believe in each person that is standing here and each person that is listening to this, that they have the power and they have the capacity, and that they are remembering. And no matter what, how uncomfortable this remembrance is, it's just very, very important to keep coming back to the ground, knowing that no change and no growth happens without doubt and without fear. We feel the fear and we continue walking through it because we know what we're standing for. We're standing for love. We are a non-violent action. We're standing for community and unity within each other. And what I would like upon myself, I would like upon my neighbor and my friend and my sister and my brother, and all of us are in that family, in that human family. So it is really, really inspiring. And with all of it, with all the spectrum of color, with all the love, the joy, the fear, the disagreement, all of that exists because we're human. So it is just a reminder that whatever it is that you are going through as a listener or as a person that is going through life, just remember that this is all part of the journey. Just keep going, just keep focusing, and focus on the light that is guiding you.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast.
Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
Kefiyas are Palestinian scarves, and they're a symbol of support for justice for the Palestinian people. From the traditional black and white kefiya to an array of modern designs, explore the range and order online or drop by 3CR during business hours. Wear your support for the rights of Palestinians. Go to kefiyas.org.au, that's kefiyas.org.au. A 3CR supporter.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to 3CR on 855 AM. Today's Monday, the 1st of September, 2025. It's the first day of spring. If you heard the last part of that interview, it was with Rana Hamida, who has just left on the Global Samud Flotilla from Barcelona with activists, organizers, and human beings from all around the world. Up next, I'll be playing the second part of the interview with Rana. Yeah, well, here in Naam in Melbourne, where 94, 95 consecutive weeks, the Palestinian people here have been leading us in solidarity, and we've been coming together and marching and protesting. So the fire that you feel
so
there is a fire that is well and truly on the way here. It's building.
It is so inspiring. I've seen the big marches on the bridge in Sydney. It is so amazing. So it's so inspiring, and it's inspiring us back here in Aotearoa, not here where I am right now, but back home where I live and where my family and friends are in Aotearoa. It's inspiring us, and to the point that we are now organizing our own And I am going to be in the sea at the same time that my comrades and my siblings and my sisters and my brothers are going to be holding the land in Aotearoa and Taumati Makaurau. So thanks for the inspiration, and just know that what happened in Australia, acknowledging the people of the land in Australia as well, and the indigenous people of that land, and acknowledging their struggle too.
Mm-hmm.
But that is a movement. It's a movement. It's a torch that whenever we light that torch, it continues to spark the light and the flames of the next and the next. So it continues. It is an active motion of love and solidarity and remembrance. So thank you so much for doing that. I am so excited to come to Australia at some point and share and join, and inshallah at that point we don't need to do all of these things, but this is just the start, because there is a lot of oppression around the world, and we want to stand for all of that. It is not for one or another, it's not selective.
Well, as you said, Rana, the global movement to Gaza is a coordinated mobilization by land, sea and air, united by the belief that the genocide has to end now, and well, yesterday. How many boats are going in this flotilla? And what is the best case scenario if you're able to open up this humanitarian corridor and get aid into Gaza?
We have been planning and organizing as many boats as we can. And it is a very, very strategic and calculated process, because you want to have the safest amount and formation of ships that will guarantee us safety passage, which would have hopefully, which is our aim, is to lead into safe passage into Gaza shores, far further away from it, for us to drop the aid and then create that humanitarian corridor for ships to come and continuously bring aid through the sea. Of course, that does not happen by just like that, because we can see the Israeli regime is acting with complete impunity, and their actions are not precedented per se. So we are relying on the community of the world and on our governments that do have our political passports in mind, you know, that we need their voices. We need them to stand up. We need them to speak up and pressure the Israeli regime to open and allow a safe passage for this humanitarian fleet of ships carrying essential aid and nothing more. So that also, as far as we can see, and we have been experiencing for 2 years or over 2 years right now, is that our governments won't do that on their own. So we do call upon the communities and the humans and everyone, everyday person that goes to their work every day and experiences the joy of life and feels what's happening right now and feels the oppression and the inhumane, unjust behavior that is being implicated on the Palestinian people in Gaza and also on the West Bank, to stand up and to apply pressure on their governments and their officials and their local governments and countries, because we need all of us on deck right now. For the best scenario to happen, we need everyone to be active, we need everyone to speak up, and just keep on going, basically. So right now we are believing and we are hoping that our mission would go through the sea, reach the borders around Gaza and deliver the aid. And then that would create that easeful flow of humanitarian corridor that will be secured for more aid to go in. As we know, the aid that is allowed to go in is a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of what the Palestinian people right now need. So we need as much help and support to allow the essential aid to arrive to the people that desperately need it at the moment.
We have time for one last question, Rana. Here in Australia and New Zealand, and for our listeners, how can they show support behind the flotilla movement? And how can they track and get involved? Are you on Instagram? Are you on social media? Is there ways that we can watch what you're doing?
Yes, so first, about keeping updated. Now, this is very important, because every day in such a mission carries so much more updates that come through. A lot happens. And we have participants, as I said, from over 40 countries, so 44 countries. And in our delegation, we have joined Aotearoa and Australia together as one delegation. and we are here together as one voice. What you can do is you can follow the people that have been on the mission, check on their social media, follow the official one for the delegation, which is globalmovementtogaza.aunz. Mm-hmm. When you follow that, you will see updates from most of the team that is going public about it, and they are posting about it. The official spokespeople can do interviews, so amazing humans like you can amplify the message. If you're a person that you feel like, oh my god, I don't have a radio, I can't do all of that, blah, 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 join your local protest, join your voice. Your voice matters. Your voice is one that is not separate of a very big movement, and you're not alone. So go to your next activation next to you in your region, gather your friends and go talk about it. Have this difficult conversation that sometimes it's really hard to have because you feel like, oh, do I know enough? Can I talk about this? What about, what if they signal me out? Talk about it, because it's very important. If we don't do it right now, then when? And pressure your MPs, talk to them. Check who are your local MPs. Go to them, find their email address. And you know what? It can be even easier if you find your local solidarity group. And once you find this group, you can ask them, and they probably are putting the work to reach out to MPs and join them. You don't have to do this alone at all, at all, because there is big solidarity groups locally in a lot of places. We have one in Aotearoa, we have in Tamaki-Makaurau, we have in Ōtautahi, we have in Dunedin, and I'm pretty sure that in Australia you have so many different organizations, and I'm sure that once you write Palestine in Australia, you will find so many different organizations and groups that are working tirelessly to amplify the voice of the Palestinian people. So join them, amplify, talk about it, join your protest next door, talk to your MPs and pressure them. They need a push. Your MPs are there because you voted them there. So they need a reminder of why and who voted them there and for what, so they don't forget the role and their responsibility. So follow this mission, share it, talk about it, join it next time. Next time, join it, because this is not going to be the last one. We are just opening a movement, a global movement for oppression. Oppressive systems should not have a place within our communities at these times. So we are the people. We are the people. We are the voice that will rise up to change this and create a new paradigm, a paradigm where people have equal human rights, where there is respect and justice and freedom of practice of your life, of experiencing life, of breathing the air, of working on your land, and of choosing whether you want to leave this land and go and live in the city or just stay in your humble little house. So we all deserve this. And just ground back into this remembrance. And within your mind, within your thoughts, just notice how the oppressive systems come up whenever you be like, oh, I'm going to go and join this. And then you feel the doubt and the fear. This is the oppressive system. So work with that and notice it and be aware of it and amplify and be there. Be with us.
Rana Hamida, thank you so much for your time. That's all we have time for. From 3CR, we wish you safe passage on your journey, to you and everyone else among this flotilla, and we hope that you are able to successfully get aid into Gaza.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for all the team that is working tirelessly behind your channel, and thank you for all the people that are standing up, and thank you for the Global Samud Flotilla and all the different organizations that are part of it, and all the humans that are working for no return other than responding to the uttermost inspiration that we have, and the people that we feel within our hearts, the Palestinian people, we are coming and we are hearing and we're listening. So thank you so much, and I hope that we speak again.
You're listening to 3CR on 855 AM. If you've just tuned in, that was Rana Hamida from the Global Samud Flotilla, speaking about the humanitarian aid corridor they're looking to open up to get aid and medical food supplies into Gaza to help the Palestinian people who are suffering through this famine and genocide by the Israeli government. If you'd like to follow the Global Samud Flotilla, you can find them on Instagram at Global Samud Flotilla, all one word. Samud is S-U-M-U-D, Flotilla. Up next, I'm just going to play a song, but it feels only fitting to play a song called Wantari Gift from the newly released film Crown of Country. The song is featuring Wanta Jumba Jimba Pawu, Jerry Jungala Patrick, and MWNCI. The film was screened on Friday evening at the Capitol Cinema in the CBD. A synopsis provided by RMIT describes it beautifully. At its heart is the voice of Wanta Jumba Jimba Pawu Kolpolun Parlunuru, excuse my pronunciation, a renowned Walpri philosopher, teacher and visionary from the desert community of the Lajamanu in the northern Tanami. An international ambassador for Walpri culture, Wanta has produced key works in indigenous education and community-based art. Wanta's father, First Contact Elder Jerry Jungala Patrick, OAM, one of the most significant Walpri songmen alive today, anchors the film in Jakurupa, Dreaming, songs from traditional ceremonies. The film is a collaboration with music producer Mark Monkey Peckham, whose real-life conversations with Wanta, based on their 15-year friendship from the soundtrack to the work. Take a journey 3,000 kilometers north and step into Monkey's place to experience an intimate perspective on cultural exchange and mutual respect between Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians. Crown of Country unfolds at a pivotal time for desert communities, where the last elders who experienced first contact with colonial Australia reflect on their past, while younger generations seek meaning in a shared, contested land. Shot on Walpri Country by filmmaker James Gillott, with support from Jeff Brewer, Crown of Country reflects on this history and invites the listener to consider new forms of belonging in Australia. This song is incredibly beautiful, but if you're tuned in, have a listen.
Consider Wanayaka. I'm called Wandari Dari. Wandari mean gift. And I want to crown you lot with the original crown of this country, the Southern Cross. You can be called Australian. You'll be called Australia if you know the land, because it'll know you. Maintain the balance, live in harmony. Because that's what the Ngatilka says. That's the whole name for Australia. Ngatilka means two mothers. Adoption is a big part in our ceremony too. That's why Jariwanta ceremony, our reconciliation ceremony, tells me that I should accept everyone, regardless of where they come from or what nation they are, if they adopt this country and the ways of this country. Tilka. I'm a guardian for that one. I'll do my best to teach you this. Normally you would go to ceremony and nearly half of your life you have to learn all these things and then teach others to pass it on. Wallubere, pass the flame. Lose the flame and your identity doesn't exist anymore. In doing that, your country's identity is gone too. Nambula Murunga, Wawarigalangula, Manginyangawe, Kananganja, Yonkankalaga, Parparamera, Ula Orubia, Ula Chok. My job, I guess, what my country tells me through the ceremony is to pass on this knowledge, not keep it to myself. So this is who I am telling this story. Yeah, my country, our country. So I want to share this knowledge about the ultimate kangaroo, the ultimate emu,
Want to open the door to opportunities? Discover Learn Local, right in the heart of your community. Build confidence in reading and writing. Gain work and life skills while supporting family. Learn Local, a wide range of low-cost courses at over 200 locations across Victoria. Your goals, your way. Visit vic.gov.au/learnlocal-firstnations to start exploring now. Authorised with Victorian Government Melbourne.
A 3CR supporter.
You're listening to 3CR on 855 AM. I just played a song called One Tari Gift from the newly released film Crown and Country. Yeah, it's a beautiful song. Highly suggest going to watch the movie and supporting the filmmakers and artists behind it, supporting the Walpri elders behind it, One Tajumba Jimba Pawu, and yeah, learning about Walpri culture. Up next, I'll be joined live in the studio by Lucy. Lucy is a student from La Trobe University who's here to discuss a research opportunity for transgender and gender diverse adults in Australia. The research project will be conducted by La Trobe University, which is currently recruiting participants for a longitudinal study focused on the health and well-being of trans and gender diverse adults in Australia. The study aims to better understand experiences of stress, social connectedness, and support among trans and gender diverse adults in Australia, and how these experiences impact health and well-being over time. It involves completing annual surveys over a period of 5 years, with the potential to expand to 10 years, depending on funding and participant engagement. Good morning, Lucy.
Good morning.
How are you doing this morning?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm very good. Thanks for joining us in the studio.
Thanks for having me.
So talk to us and the listeners about the study.
Yeah, so as you said, I'm a psych student at La Trobe University, and I've got the wonderful opportunity of being part of the research team, basically doing survey research to understand how stress is impacting the mental health of trans and gender diverse people in Australia. We want to hear about your positive and your negative experiences, such as accessing healthcare, cost of living, mental health, discrimination, and transphobia, because often these are kind of parts of the trans experience, especially being an adult in Australia. Also as well, something that I'd like to mention is we want to hear about the impacts of something called minority stress. Minority stress is basically like the ongoing stress and burden on stigmatized groups of people because they face prejudice or stigma or shame. And it accumulates over time coming from your experiences receiving that in the world and then also your internal responses. So shame, fear of rejection, and that impacts your mental health. Mm-hmm. So for people that are trans and gender diverse, as you can imagine, with everything that's going on at the moment, that's quite a heavy burden.
It is.
That being said, though, at the same time, there are also really positive aspects such as like strong social support, having a positive regard for your identity that can also really insulate you against minority stress. But the reason we're interested in that is because often minority stress can have an impact on mental health, and these experiences like accessing healthcare and things like that can really, really impact, you know, your health outcomes.
Yeah. No doubt. I get the sense as well, the focus or outcome goal is getting the scope of understanding from access to healthcare systems and stigmatization on these minority groups, or trans people and diverse, gender diverse people in Australia, but really having a focus on health and well-being to improve these things.
Yeah, so the reason that it's a longitudinal study, basically that means it's a study over time. So rather than just taking a snapshot of how people are doing at one point in time, we're giving trans people the opportunity to check in once a year, do the online survey, it's very quick, and really let us know what's been going on for you. And as you can imagine, if we're checking in annually, it gives us a much richer understanding of what's been going on for you than just asking you once. Especially with things like healthcare and stigmatization, these are often like pretty big social structures and processes and things that kind of change over time. And as I've said, with the minority stress, obviously that has an impact on you. So checking in every year is a great opportunity to hear your voices, hear your complex lived experience as a trans and gender diverse person, and really make sure we're hearing as much as we can from you. Yeah.
A question that I have is, you say it's longitudinal, but if people are to check in annually, how many years are you looking to have people checking in for? And is it possible to build a consistent ongoing relationship sort of aligned with like academic spaces and empowering queer and trans voices in these spaces?
Yeah, so the first half of your question, right now we're going to try and do a survey every year for the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. And there's potential, if there's funding and the opportunity, to extend that to 10 years, which would be fantastic. But that's going to be more of a long-term thing, so watch this space. In terms of how this kind of intersects with the academic space, I know that for a lot of trans and gender diverse people, sharing a lot of information like this is pretty vulnerable. You're asking people to talk about quite a lot of negative experiences and maybe the rejection or the stigma that they face in the world. And it might sound as if, like, you know, very mysterious, like, where is this information going and who's reading this and why are we doing it? The reason that we do annual surveys is because we want to check in on you every year and really understand what's been happening for you, because the importance of research in academia is really just getting the evidence base that we can use in future to inform better mental health services or improving your health outcomes, or really listening to your voices and responding to your healthcare needs. The trans and gender diverse experience, although it's unique to everyone, you know, it's important to recognize the unique challenges that the general population doesn't face. So it's important to have that representation in academia, because often we're a population that doesn't really get listened to too much. Especially at the moment, there's so much discussion and analysis and kind of pulling apart of transgender like people and what that means. But funnily enough, it doesn't really include the actual population that we're talking about. So this is your opportunity to kind of let us have it, you know, let us know what's been going on for you, and like kind of just let people know what's been going on. And especially in an academic context, we're going to listen to that and we're going to try and use this to present it to people that can actually make those changes.
Who is eligible to participate and how can they gain access?
So anyone that identifies as transgender or gender diverse, that's residing in so-called Australia, as long as they're English speaking and 18 years old or older, you are eligible. So it's not just binary trans people. It's also people that are non-binary, gender fluid. But yeah, as long as you're over 18 in so-called Australia and trans and gender diverse, this is the study for you. Yeah.
And is that inclusive of sort of the intersectional aspects of it as well with culture and identity too? Like people of color, BIPOC, trans or gender diverse identifying people?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think being in Australia was such a kind of unique country where it's so diverse and multicultural. And this is something that I'm really excited about, is that I would love to kind of capture so many different voices. It's not just about being trans or gender diverse. It's also about the impacts of what is it like being black or brown in so-called Australia? What is it like being First Nations? And then you add that on top of being trans or gender diverse. That's a really complex experience. You know what I mean? So being able to capture all of these experiences, like whether you transition younger in life, later in life, whether you're black or brown, BIPOC, First Nations, whether you're an immigrant, whether you speak another language, things like that are really important because we have to elevate every single trans voice. If we were only collecting, you know, data of white trans people, it's very limited in its scope. So I really want to emphasize that people that are trans and gender diverse and also belong to other minorities, like, this is your time, like, speak on it. Let us have it, because I really want to hear your voices in this research. Like, this is where it matters.
Yeah, on allyship and advocating for trans and gender diverse voices outside of, I suppose, like, academic spaces, but we're trying to keep it in the lines of the study for this interview and this conversation right now, which is important. But yeah, how can people practice allyship, support trans identifying people and those who identify as gender diverse in their experiences, considering the stereotypes, the stigmas, and I suppose encourage them to actually take part and participate in the study?
Yeah, so the first thing I'll answer is basically, like, why should someone trans care about this project? Like, what's the investment? And again, I recognize that, like, academia and social institutions are, funnily enough, not spaces that really welcome people like us. And so I should also mention as well that I am a trans woman living in the state of Victoria. So dolls represent. But basically, the importance of someone like me in academia and on this research project is that I'm like a safety net to make sure that we're really capturing the voices of my community. I know how important this is to my community. And like, you should care because you are the collaborator and the holder of knowledge. You are the expert. This is your life day in and day out as a trans and gender diverse person, especially so if you belong to other minorities. We really need to hear that. And as someone that's like, we need people at all levels, as someone that's like involved as an investigator, but then also people in the community that are participants, having people like us at all levels of this is like an assurance that our voice is going to be heard, responded to in the right way. I think the second part of that question seems like zooming out a bit for allyship and advocacy, right? I think that an important thing is to, especially at the moment, like I said before, there's so much analysis and discussion and kind of questioning and pulling apart trans people and what it means and why it is and, you know, should they access this treatment or that treatment? And it's very exhausting, these conversations to keep on having, because ultimately we are people just like everyone else, right? And tearing apart something like that is very stressful, has impacts on us, but it doesn't really humanize us. There's an opportunity to listen to our voices as an ally, hear what we're really saying and respond to that. So, you know, there's that like saying at the moment, protect the dolls, for example. What does that look like on a day-to-day basis? It means checking in on your trans friends and family. It means using their name, their chosen name, not the dead name. It means choosing their right pronouns. It means respecting them. It means standing up for them when someone isn't treating them properly in public or in private. It means making sure that you're accommodating their unique experiences and challenges day in and day out. And I just like to say that, like, as a trans person involved in this project and being on air and stuff, it's such a cool opportunity to platform this because our community doesn't really get these opportunities. So again, making sure that you're cheering your trans friends and family on when they do get these opportunities and making sure that they get access to that is really important. And also as well, just being open. I think listening and being open to the feedback that the trans experience is very unique and it's really powerful in a hugely positive way, but it obviously comes with its own set of challenges. And as someone that's not trans, who is standing side by side with someone on that journey, make sure that you're cheering them on and really listening to them and helping them through that journey the way that they need it. Yeah, that's what I would say to an ally or an advocate.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to 3CR on 855 AM. I'm speaking with Lucy from La Trobe University, who's discussing a research opportunity for transgender and gender diverse adults in Australia. Lucy, we're going to have to wrap it up in 1 minute. Uh-huh. But is there a link? Is there a study QR code or something that people can... I can put on the Monday breakfast show, actually, after... it'll be up around 9:30, 10 o'clock this morning. And in the show notes, in the links under Monday Breakfast, I'll add in anything that you need for promotion for this study.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we have a research flyer that has a QR code and some more information. It's also got the contact details of the research, the principal investigator, Associate Professor Chris Pepping. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's a flyer and there's a survey link. You can do it online. It's very easy. I guess the last thing I would say is to my trans listeners out there, this is your chance to really let those institutions have it. Let us know what's going on. And as someone trans involved in this project at the researcher level, I will make sure that your voice is heard in the right way. Take this as the opportunity to be the expert and the holder of knowledge and let us know how your experience has been. We want to hear all parts of it, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And yeah, as someone on the research side of things, I would really love to hear your voices.
Thank you so much, Lucy. The Queen has spoken.
Get involved if
you can. Sending love to all trans and gender diverse adults and folk listening this morning out there in Australia. We value you. We love you. And yeah, stay safe out there.
If you're experiencing family violence, free legal support is available. You may need support with obtaining protection, setting up safe parenting arrangements, organising a new visa, getting into safe housing, or making sure bills and bank accounts are split fairly. Community legal centres have expertise in helping people who experience family violence and can provide confidential advice to help you understand your rights and legal options. Reach out today for guidance and support. Visit www.fclc.org.au and click Get Help to find a community legal centre near you. You don't have to face family violence alone. If you're currently in crisis, please contact Safe Steps on 1800 015 188. Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
The Commons Social Change Library is an online collection of educational resources for those involved in community campaigns and social and labour movements. It collects, curates and distributes key lessons and resources from progressive movements from around Australia and across the globe. The library includes over 1,400 resources covering campaign strategy, community organising, activist history, digital campaigning, justice, equity, diversity and inclusion, and much, much more. It's free to access the library, so check out the collection at www.commonslibrary.org.
We're we're not meant to have anything nuclear in our country.
It's really important and urgent that Australia get serious about nuclear disarmament.
Well, nobody anywhere on the planet has figured out how to deal with highly radioactive waste.
Most of those who've managed nuclear weapons consider this to be the most dangerous time that we've ever lived in, with the danger of nuclear war at unprecedented levels.
You're listening to Radical Radio 3CR.
Has Centrelink made a decision you disagree with? Most Centrelink decisions can be appealed up to 3 times. Examples of decisions you can appeal include whether you're eligible for a payment, cancellation or suspension of your payment, how much you get paid, and Centrelink debts. One of the most common Centrelink decisions appealed are Centrelink debts. Centrelink will say you owe a debt if the staff determine you've been paid more than you should have. Debts can occur for a variety of reasons. In some instances, if there's been an administrative error or if you have special circumstances, you may not have to repay that debt. The appeal process is free, but time limits can apply and will affect your entitlement to back payment. Social Security Rights Victoria is a specialist community legal centre providing Victorians free advice to help you understand your Centrelink issues and the appeal processes. You can contact Social Security Rights Victoria on 9481 0355 or online at ssrv.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
When I was new to Melbourne, I found a Food Not Bombs flyer on the road, and I had like this fist with a carrot, and carrots are my favourite vegetable. Yeah, I think they were asking for help doing stuff, and I got in touch.
We, I guess, rescue food
that would otherwise go to waste.
I like the aspect of sharing food and not making anyone feel obligated to pay anything for it.
We make a real point at Food Not Bombs of involving everyone who wants to be involved in whichever part they want to be involved in.
For more information, go to fnbmelb.noblogs.org. Food Not Bombs is a 3CR supporter.
You're listening to 3CR on 855 AM. Up next, I'll be joined live to air by Natalie Farah to discuss yesterday's pro-Palestine anti-fascist and anti-racism rally and the so-called March for Australia demonstration, which pushed an anti-immigration agenda and saw groups of neo-Nazis openly targeting migrant communities as well as camp sovereignty. Natalie is a passionate advocate, writer and political campaigner from the Swana region. She is a proud descendant of a long line of resistance fighters, arriving to this continent as a refugee and with a strong focus on centering First Nations justice. Natalie has campaigned against racism, for refugee rights, for climate justice, and recently she has a strong focus on stopping the arms trade with Israel and weapons manufacturing on this continent. She resists through storytelling, spoken word, and staunch political action.
Hello?
Good morning, Natalie. Can you hear me?
Hey, yeah, I can hear you.
Thanks for joining us on the show this morning. Yesterday was a big day.
Yeah, yesterday was a pretty massive day. And a lot of us are feeling pretty sore and tired this morning, but certainly very proud of our comrades and, yeah, standing up for racism yesterday.
Mm. Very, very important at this period of time, I suppose. But could you speak to who the organisers were behind yesterday's rallies?
Yesterday was a pretty broad coalition of different groups. We had the weekly Palestine rally that started at State Library. And so that's, you know, Students for Palestine and the NAM Coalition and Free Palestine Melbourne, etc. There was another group of people who wanted to organise a more sort of direct disruption to the so-called March for Australia. And that group met at Federation Square at the time where the march started to gather. And very, very quickly, we can tell what the theme of the day was going to be. We were pushed back very, you know, abruptly, very violently. And, yeah, while the March for Australia were allowed to continue to stay where they are, and we had about, like, three arrests just in that process of being pushed back two blocks or so. It was horrendous from the beginning, and unfortunately didn't really get better throughout the rest of the day.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely some intense, like, sort of spitfires popping off all throughout the city. But could you comment on police presence in the city throughout the day and their attitudes towards anti-immigration protesters and pro-Palestine protesters, given the new designated search laws as well?
Yeah, well, you know, I was on the front lines for most of the time. I'm lucky that I'm able to, you know, to push through lots of pepper spray and whatnot. But it was really clear from the first interaction that, firstly, they didn't want to talk to us. I went and introduced myself a couple of times, and I said that I'd like to have a conversation about, you know, their movements, our movements. And I said that, we wanted to remain peaceful. And they just they shook their head at me. They just refused to have a conversation, which was, you know, really disappointing to say the least. The presence was quite large, and it was pretty clear as well, like, where the weapons were facing. So just from being on the front lines and seeing as they approach, they approach us, there was a moment where we were, like, in direct confrontation on Collins Street. And they just faced us with the pepper spray, and they gave their back to the, you know, people who were throwing projectiles and glass at us. So nothing surprising here, unfortunately. It was really clear who they were trying to protect, but they kept saying, "We're trying to protect you." Didn't really see that happening, to be honest.
The action ended with a smoking ceremony, a debrief and a barbecue at Camp Sovereignty. But what happened at Camp Sovereignty?
So, you know, we started to arrive at Camp Sovereignty around 2:30. Around 4 o'clock we had, the weekly ceremony. Every week after the Palestine rally we go there, and there's, you know, beautiful smoke, and we gather around the fire. And maybe just as that was finishing up, we were all sitting around. We see a group wearing all black heading from the city towards us. We recognised that they are the NSN, so the National Socialist Network. And once they get to the bottom of the hill, they start shouting, "Aussie, Aussie, Aussie." And then they start laughing, which was really interesting. And they started running up the hill. We all got to our feet. But by the time we got to our feet, they were already there. They attacked us with flagpoles, with metal poles, bits of brick, bits of, you know, wood, basically whatever they can find around. They attacked the women first, so about three or four of us were young women, mostly women of colour. We went up to them to try and de-escalate the situation, just try and talk to them, and they just tripped us, and while we were down, just, you know, kicked us in the stomach, got a few comrades with pretty significant injuries that are in the hospital at the moment. And I guess once they finished that bashing, they moved on other parts of the camp. We formed a line. It was really inspiring. We didn't actually let them anywhere near the fire. We protected the fire. Slowly we pushed them out. They just continued to throw stuff at us. We continued to just push back until we could hear police sirens coming, and they just, you know, scurried away. That's in summary what happened. It was very It was very, it's terrifying. It was also just a bit unbelievable, this brazen attack of, you know, racist, hateful attack with their faces completely uncovered, like they just have no fear anymore. They've got no shame, no fear. And this is because of, you know, lack of action by the police and by the state government in actually holding them accountable. They've allowed fascist ideology and Nazi to spread. And this is what we get now, is we get a mob of very young men. They were all under 30 who are just bashing women without, you know, any fear.
Yeah, I think it was incredibly brave of those who are at Camp Sovereignty to stand up and protect it, as it is a sacred space. It is a ceremonial space. And it's one of the most important places in this city.
Absolutely. And that's exactly why they attacked it, right? Like, the first thing that they went for was the Aboriginal flag. And it was really clear they were there because this is what Land Back looks like. You know, Uncle Robbie set up that camp as, you know, a form of protest and has kept the fire burning. And they absolutely hate that.
And shout out to any comrades and family and friends who stayed overnight at Camp Sovereignty to hold down the fort, so to speak. And prayers up to any mob and Indigenous folk, Palestinians, or people from migrant backgrounds as well, or minority groups who were harmed throughout yesterday. But what words, to wrap up, Natalie, what words or advice do you have for the community at this point in time?
We need to stand together properly, and we need to get serious about protecting ourselves. It is very clear that the police are not here to protect us. We had to stand up and resist the Nazis by ourselves, and I imagine that that might happen again, especially at Camp Sovereignty. We're calling on people to, firstly, you know, head down to Camp Sovereignty if you haven't been. Have a chat. See what way you can support. We always need, you know, food and snacks and water and tea and things like that. If you can stay overnight, that would be really appreciated, because that's really the most vulnerable time for that space. And maybe we need to just start thinking about, you know, how we interact together as well between all of the different groups to stop the leftist infighting, as they call it, and collaborate a bit better with each other, because it's not a game. And to all of the, you know, people who don't identify as women or non-binary, we need you. We need people to step up, because women are on the front lines. We're already doing everything, and then now we're being properly targeted, and so we need people to step up and support physically, to be there to protect the community. So put your money where your mouth is.
That's all we've got time for, Nat. Thank you so much for your time and energy. And
thank you.
Appreciate all the work that you do for the community.
Thank you.
No worries. Take care today.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Cam Smith from Yanar Pasaran.
I'm Andy Fleming.
Andy, quick question. The commercial media, that provides a voice to marginalised communities, doesn't it? And as governments around the world take a turn to the far right, it provides a critical anti-fascist analysis?
Cam, how many times do I have to tell you this? No, that's not the case.
Oh, that's not good. So who is doing all that?
Cam, community media, including 3CR, Melbourne's community radio.
And how can we support 3CR in doing that?
We can subscribe, Cam, at any time.
By visiting 3cr.org.au or calling the station on 9419 8377. Subscribe to 3CR.
And stay anti-fascist.
You're listening to 3CR on 855 AM. If you're just tuning in, I was just speaking with Natalie Farah about yesterday's anti-immigration and pro-Palestine rallies and I suppose the events that ensued throughout the day. Up next, we'll be playing a segment from Tiny Sparks and Turning Points. And now we're very excited to bring you a new segment. This is a bulletin from our good friends at the Common Social Change Library. Today, they'll bring us some radical events over the last years that have changed this country. This feature is looking at the month of September over our collective history and will come to listeners on the first Monday of every month at 8 a.m. It's a good example of why we need to remember our history in order to build a better future. For now, a big thank you to our friends at Common Social Change Library, and you can find their work at www.commonslibrary.org and look out for their page on the 3CR website, which we will feature if you want to listen back, which is coming soon.
Tiny Sparks and Turning Points is a monthly selection of protests, strikes and significant dates concerning social change in Australian history,
which can be found at commonslibrary.org.
Presented by the Commons Social Change Library, a repository of more than 1,500 resources for campaigners.
On the 1st of September 1999, construction sites were shut down across Melbourne as part of protests demanding improved workplace safety and the introduction of industrial manslaughter laws. This came in the wake of the 10th building workplace death that year.
On the 6th of September 1898, more than 200 protesters invaded the parliamentary clubroom of the Victorian Legislative Council to call for women's suffrage.
Despite a massive security crackdown and sections of Sydney being blocked off, more than 10,000 protesters turned out on the 8th of September 2007 to protest against the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Conference.
On the 10th of September 1976, ABC TV transmissions in Sydney were blacked out for half an hour during a stop work to protest censorship by the station's new chairperson.
Agitation concerning widespread poverty and unemployment came to a head in Brisbane on the 11th of September 1866, when around 500 unemployed people gathered outside the Dunmore Arms Hotel in George Street. In previous weeks, railway stores had been raided in Laidley and large groups of unemployed labourers had begun a march on Brisbane. These joined local unemployed people to hold a public meeting and send a deputation to the government, which resulted in offers of limited rations and some work at reduced wages. After the government rejected further demands, a crowd marched on the city's commissariat store. They were dispersed after officers fixed bayonets and loaded live ammunition. Key activists were arrested, and on the following day, the wharves were flooded with police to prevent demonstrations against the shipping of unemployed to other parts of the state.
On the 12th of September 2014, residents set up a protest camp and began picketing to prevent energy company AGL from carrying out coal seam gas exploration in New South Wales' Gloucester Valley.
1,500 people marched on the 14th of September 1984 in Alice Springs against proposals to weaken protection for Aboriginal sacred sites.
In 1978, the ultra-conservative Queensland state government cracked down on progressive movements by banning street protests. This resulted in a long and hard-fought campaign of defiance, which led to thousands of arrests. After years, a group of activists tried a new tack by declaring Brisbane's Queen Street Mall a free speech mall on the 15th of September 1983. On the day, a ribbon-cutting ceremony took place before application forms for protest permits, which the government was notorious for never granting, were torn up. Festivities concluded with protesters marching out of the mall, carrying a banner reading Permit Schmermit, before 22 were promptly arrested. Months of further action would ensue before authorities backed down in November, unofficially allowing soapbox speaking in the mall to continue unopposed.
In September 1973, Gay Pride Week events were held across Australia, raising the fight against discrimination to new levels.
On the 15th of September 1994, hundreds of students occupied the Chancellery building at Canberra's Australian National University for 8 days before police broke through a Trades and Labour Council endorsed picket to evict them. Having already seen the federal ALP Hawke government abolish free university education in 1989, after the Whitlam government originally introduced it in 1974, ANU students had reacted to moves by the administration to introduce a $5,000 upfront fee for a law course. During the occupation, students further disrupted the functioning of the university by setting up a union-endorsed picket of its mailroom.
Also on the 15th of September, but in 2011, refugees staged a rooftop protest at the Northern Immigration Detention Centre in Darwin. They hung banners which read, "We need help," and "People Smugglers and Department of Immigration and Citizenship are the same, both playing with our life."
On the 16th of September 1973, anti-freeway protesters squatted houses in Bowen Hills, Brisbane, as part of a successful campaign to save parts of the suburb from destruction.
Over 4,000 people attended an international peace congress held at the Melbourne Exhibition Buildings on the 17th of September 1936.
In 1888, New South Wales coal miners struck against industry practices that employed non-union labour at substandard wages to work in newer mines and seams with impurities. On the 18th of September, mine owners provocatively brought in six strikebreakers to load previously mined coal at the new Lambden sea pit. 1,000 strikers massed in response. Armed police were mobilised to protect the strikebreakers and at one stage threatened the crowd with a Nordenfeldt gun, an anti-personnel rifle capable of firing multiple bullets at once. The following day, the New South Wales Premier sent in military reinforcements, armed with another Nordenfeldt gun, to further deter protest. Despite this show of force, the strike continued until late November.
On the 18th of September 2012, residents of Natai declared their town and much of Sydney's water catchment coal seam gas mining free.
On September the 18th, 1970, tens of thousands of people gathered across Australia for the second moratorium to end the war in Vietnam. With public opinion having swung heavily against conscription and the war, the event continued to push against federal government resistance by aiming to stop work to stop the war. Although the first moratorium in May 1970 had been accompanied by hyperbolic claims of looming violence from authorities, the events had passed off with few incidents. Nevertheless, state governments had cracked down on protests since, proposing draconian anti-demonstration laws and banning marches from using spaces such as Sydney's Hyde Park and the Domain. School students across Australia were punished and expelled for wearing moratorium badges. The federal government banned African-American comedian Dick Gregory from entering the country, and once again, the media whipped up a storm of negative publicity surrounding anti-war activists. Despite this, mass rallies were held in major Australian towns and cities.
On September the 20th, 1972, tens of thousands of students from hundreds of schools joined Australia's first national school strike. Common demands included the democratisation of education, transparency around school rules, increases in education funding, and an end to corporal punishment and gender segregation.
In September 1978, demonstrators met each stop of an Australian tour by Mary Whitehouse, a self-styled morals crusader from the UK. Whitehouse's messages included instructing followers in Perth that a woman, quote, was expected to entertain her husband to stop him from watching too much TV. On September the 20th in Melbourne, Whitehouse addressed what she described as a disappointing number of followers at Festival Hall, while hundreds demonstrated outside against her campaign to restrict civil and human rights for women, LGBTIQA+ community members and others. The following day, a rally by 30 members of the Christian conservative group Festival of Light at the University of Sydney was outnumbered 25-1 by their opponents. Another Festival of Light rally held the same day was met by 350 counter-protesters who were closely watched by 150 police. Whitehouse was splattered by a cream pie in Brisbane, and a meeting in Perth was also met with protest.
The Sydney Broadway squats ran for almost a year from August 2000 to July 2001. Located on a major traffic route into the central city, the shop fronts not only provided housing and a social space for a variety of activities, but also created a vibrant and highly visible symbol of resistance to the gentrification caused by the 2000 Olympics. An attempt by the South Sydney Council, which had long left the properties empty, to evict residents on the 26th of September 2000 was deterred by a picket line which brought together unionists, squatters, students, and other community members. Under pressure, the council agreed to grant the squatters a caretaker's lease.
On the 26th of September 2010, members of Rising Tide occupied loaders and other infrastructure in Newcastle, shutting down the world's biggest coal port for 8 hours.
Activists opposed to the war against Vietnam created a draft resistors sanctuary on the 27th of September 1971 to shelter those defying conscription through a three-day occupation of the Melbourne University Student Union.
On the 29th of September 1840, a large meeting of workers was held in Sydney's Mechanics School of Arts to oppose the draconian Hired Servants Act. A petition was created and subsequently signed by more than 3,000 free workers, a significant proportion of those residing in the colony. This rejected the act as altogether too harsh, providing employers with powers oppressing and defrauding his workmen on indefinable charges of ill behaviour or misdemeanour, while it gives the workmen no power of protection against unjustifiable insolence and provocation on the part of the master. The bill, which included heavy penalties for leaving a job without an employer's permission or for taking industrial action, was passed in the context of a labour shortage and the formation of 10 unions in the colony. Despite heavy fines and jailings being used against them, workers continue to defy the law and organise, with the number of unions growing steadily over the following decades.
On the 29th of September 1891, the Victorian Parliament was presented with a monster petition containing 30,000 signatures in support of women's suffrage. Individual petitions were joined together to form a long roll which was 20 centimetres wide and 260 metres long. Taking hours to unspool, its impressive size and unique format garnered much attention. Similarly impressive was the fact that activists had collected the signatures in a concentrated six-week door-knocking drive.
You've been listening to Tiny Sparks and Turning Points. The segment will return next month. In the meantime, to find out more about the history of social change in Australia, you can visit commonslibrary.org.
And that's it today from 3CR on 8:55 a.m. from the Monday Breakfast Show. Thanks for tuning in and listening to everything that I guess all of the speakers had to contribute today. Just a little wrap up from what we had. The news headlines for today were advocacy groups sign an open letter in the against Northern Territory government's trial allowing public to purchase and carry OC pepper spray. Disability workers crisis sparks calls for a pledge and federal assistance. And fracking continues in the Kimberley. And our segments from today, we started off with an interview with Rana Hamida from the Global Samud Flotilla. And after that, played Wantari Gift, a song from the newly released film Crown and Country, with elders speaking from Walpuri Country in Central Australia. After that, I was joined live in the studio by Lucy from La Trobe University about a research opportunity for trans and gender diverse adults in Australia. After that, I spoke with Natalie Farrer about yesterday's anti-immigration protest clashing with Palestine rally. And finally, we heard the Tiny Sparks and Turning Points segment. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you all have a wonderful day and all the best for the week.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.